Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, it is the Red Men Originals podcast. I'm Paul Meachin, Chris Pager, Chloe Bloxham and Steve Plunkett join us in the studio for this one because Dan is overworked and Steve is having a break. And also because, you know, we like you and you're good. Just to clarify that as well. We like you, you're really good. Actually, if you want to see more of Steve, we've got our 50 greatest Liverpool signings of all time specials dropping over Christmas on redmanplus.com. And I was listening to some of your filming the other day. A frightening amount of insight on stuff where, like, we turn up to do ours. It's like, yeah, I remember him. He was good. Or, nah, he was a bit crap. You're like, and I remember this moment in 1986 and the Liverpool fans on the test. I was like, wow, amazing stuff. So, yeah, as always, a pleasure. Right, we're going to be getting through the game from the weekend, which, of course, was absolutely stupendous. Four of the best goals you're ever likely to see in a football game, as Liverpool beat Fulham by 4-3. We're going to be reacting to the FA Cup draw and we'll do a little look ahead to Sheffield United as well, all in good time. But it is officially comfortably into December now. We've been doing a prize draw every day for our legend tier subscribers over on redmanplus.com. And the prize that we're giving away today is this. It is one of our Christmas, you hold that up because that is horrendously obscured. I'm sat is one of our 7-0 Redmen Christmas sweatshirts, commemorating a wonderful game of football that happened earlier on this year. In no way, shape or form, an hilarious cash grab. Someone actually came up to me in the ground the other day and asked for a photo with his one on. He said he works in Bolton and he just loves the fact that he wears it to work, and like, there's loads of Manx, and he said they all kind of glance and they all want to read it more, but they obviously, they can get what it is at a glance and don't want to be seen to be like drawn into it. So he said he's walking an extra foot tall with that on the office. Right, we've got the wheel of names up, so we'll do the draw for that right now. Let's have a little bit of a drum roll. Ooh. Hey, Tom Wade. Well done, Tom Wade. You have won. Yeah, that wonderful Red Men Christmas sweatshirt.
Hopefully you're an extra large.
If not, you can sleep in it, it'll be fine. Or not, if you're like figuring that, you figure it out. No, we'll sort it out. We'll be in touch over all that. So yeah, thank you so much. Another draw will be happening tomorrow on the news show at 12:30 live on the YouTube channel. So if you want to get yourself in the hat for everything that we're giving away, there's more details on that later on in the show. But go to redmenplus.com, join or upgrade to legend tier status, and then you will get involved with all that and boss stuff still to come as well. Right. Buy tickets as well. Keo, we had him on the podcast last week. We announced him. He's the musical act that's coming to support us over in Belfast and Dublin on the 23rd and 24th of March next year. Tickets are available on ticketmaster.ie. So go and grab them if you're over that way. Right. Sound. Chris, the match. somehow we've ended up playing in one of the all-time Premier League sort of legendary football matches, as Jürgen Klopp said, like, we're welcome, but yeah, it's not what I expected to be doing on a Sunday afternoon when I looked ahead at the fixtures and went, cool,
4-0, yeah, that'll do us, no problem whatsoever. It was was it a Premier League all-time classic? Was it really?
Yeah, 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, 3-2 to Fulham, 3-3, 4-3 Liverpool. All Liverpool's goals were absolute worldies.
I suppose it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's the goals.
And yeah, I was dead annoyed for most of it because of the way that, like, we should have absolutely tonked them. And for some reason, we just kept conceding really stupidly easy goals and scoring unbelievable goals. It was a mad one. Like, the feeling at the end of the game or when those two goals go in for us, taking it to 3-3 and 4-3, like, that's up there, you know what I mean, with any of the absolute all-time greats and stuff. I never considered it a classic until you sort of break it down like that, and I'm like, it might very well be, but it can't be because it's Fulham and we should have tonked them 4-0.
Yeah. Cool. So, unlucky feelings and thoughts, because Chris thought we should have won 4-0. Chloe, you nearly cried when you spoke to us post-match. You were welling up. You were a little emotional coming out of that game.
I went from 80th minute, 3-2, thinking we've lost the league, to 87th minute, 4-3. Oh my God, we're going to win the league. It was quite the turnaround for me and my emotionally stable mindset. I just feel like there were so many highs and so many lows in the game that after it, I just felt completely exhausted.
Drained.
Like everything I'd put into that game from the stands. It had the good, the bad, the ugly, the absolutely outrageous. It had absolutely everything. And I think just by the end of it, I think because you do that 180 where you think, oh my God, we've dropped points to, like, in the moment when you're losing 3-2 with 80 minutes in and you've missed massive chances at the start of the second half, all I'm thinking is Luton, Fulham, can you win a league dropping points to them? 4 points especially? No, you can't. And then obviously we came back, and when Endo scored the goal, I was really happy with the players that stood out, because the players that have been criticised, you know, Trent's been heavily criticised and he stands up once again. But Taru Endo, man, I loved it, and you could see the captaincy coming through him. I thought he was excellent when he came on the pitch, he was everywhere, but when he scored that goal, it was absolutely not. You get that ball and we get back and we go again. Kostas Tsimikas, brilliant. Loved his performance as well. McAllister, I thought when he was on the pitch defensively, I thought he was really, really good as well. Obviously, he scores the banger. I just felt exhausted and I felt like, oh my God, like, now it's all over to you. I was just picturing at full time, put that on in Manchester City's dressing room right now. That's all I wanted.
I'm glad it was an interesting game, because Chloe's basically covered every topic in a neat 40 second combo there. Steve Plunk, it was just... I didn't expect that to be one of the memorable games, as we were saying. It's Fulham. We got through Man City. I mentioned post-match, but you know, me and Chris have been having a discussion about how that City game and Trent scoring the goal and doing the shush was probably likely the biggest sort of moment to come between now and Christmas, because of the sort of profile of the teams that were due to play. But, you know, trust Liverpool, trust Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool to find a new way to get us super excited.
I'm with you, Chris, that it can't be a classic, but it is, kind of thing. I think the goals, it's the goals that make the difference. We get ourselves back from adversity. We don't just do it by scruffy goals. We're banging top bins every time we try it out. Even the free kick comes off the bar, they're desperate to give it as an own goal. It's just the most Liverpool way to do things, isn't it? Certainly a Jurgen Klopp way to do things. There's been a number of games where we've thought, where's this going? And you're right, if you come out of that game with a draw or a defeat, you're thinking that puts a massive dent in any aspirations we've got of challenging City or whoever it might be at the end of the season. But the character, as Dan said in his little match report, I had a look at that earlier, the character of the side to not... We keep seeing this, don't we? They're not dead and buried. They don't know when they're beat.
Yeah.
And I think this is the new players in the side, the Endos, the Szoboszlais, the McAllisters. They've got legacies to build. They've got memories to make and things for the fans to latch on to. So they're not in the sort of same mindset as the older players who go, we've been here before and actually I'm not that bothered. It really means a lot to them, and you can see it. And the way it ends is just absolutely brilliant.
Were we crap or boss?
At times crap and at times boss. Yeah. When we were crap, we were really crap.
Yeah.
But when we were boss, we were really boss.
Yeah, well said, mate. I'll go with that.
Yeah. Because that's it. Like, we were actually...
We dominated them.
Yeah.
We did dominate them, but like... That game for me, and this is in no way a slight on Cueva and Kelleher, but it's a much more comfortable game with Alisson Becker in between the sticks. Yeah. Because of the way that we play, because of the way that we give up the chances, we've almost become accustomed to Alisson just saving those mad ones that we give away, because he is the best in the world. And what we've got right now is a goalkeeper who is Premier League class, but not world class. Mm-hmm. And we're playing exactly the same way. And, you know, there's things that Kelleher will be able to do better, I've no doubt about it. But there's things that Kelleher won't be able to do that Alisson Becker can. And you can't have a go at Kelleher for that. That's just, we've become accustomed to the best goalkeeper in the world being at Anfield between the sticks, saving these massive ones for us time and time again. And you're almost parked them when you win 4-0, because it kind of doesn't matter anymore, because he scored four goals, but he still made three massive saves. And so he saved you from being in one of them mad situations that you have to be. So for me, like, look, it's part and parcel. When you've not got Alisson and you've not got Robertson, and by the way, I agree with you, I thought Kostas Tsimikas was unbelievable and just seems to be getting better and better. They are still a huge miss for us. They do take something away from us. And Jürgen is very much like, you know, is in the news at the moment, Ange Postecoglou. He's got one way of playing for us. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to change that because we haven't got Alisson Becker in goal. So we might concede a few more goals. It might get a little bit hairy at times. But we've got the players there who can step up and score the goals that thankfully we need to win the game. And it was actually nice to see it wasn't the forwards.
Yeah.
In some way, like just having the midfielders all score. I mean, like McAllister's is maybe the best first goal for a club you're ever going to see. But Endo's, the calmness with which he takes it.
He like rounds the ball to be able to.
My word.
He doesn't run onto it. And McAllister runs onto it. And the way he strikes it is just because of how where the ball is and where he's coming. Exactly. Endo has to like kind of shuffle around it to be able to get that curl on. No, it's brilliant. Let's just stick with Keller a second, Chloe, because I've seen that, and actually this is really nice, I've seen a lot of people in comments on Redmen, I've seen it over on my channel as well, people saying like, don't slaughter Kelleher, don't, you know, give him too much, he's a young goalie, he needs to improve. I've seen a couple of negative comments naturally because it's football, but yeah, I feel a bit sorry for him, I really do at times, because as Chris says, he's in this Alisson shaped silhouette when he plays in goal for Liverpool, and he's not that big, and he's not that good. I think he's absolutely fine, but it goes back to my point a little bit on the podcast, was it last week or even the match preview, of like, I just want him to save more stuff, and that didn't help. But on the positive for him, there was one moment, I don't know if it was after their first or second, and the ball got played back to him, and he got it stuck in his feet inside the 6-yard box, and I went, oh my god, this is the moment where he's going to crumble here, he's going to give the ball away and we're going to be in all kinds of trouble, and he just managed to clear his feet in time and move the ball on, and it didn't actually hamper how he played. So actually I think that is a positive for a goalie coming in out the cold. And yeah, could he do a bit better with one or two of the goals, perhaps? But yeah, I actually thought he actually kept his all-round composure pretty well. Disagree. Chloe Bloxham, ready to bring out the claws. Go on.
No, it's hard, because I think I mentioned this after the game on my reaction, is that he's a yo-yo in this team. He's not played fully with this back four, because these aren't the players that play in Europa League. Yeah. He's a cup competition goalkeeper. He's not going to be able to do what Alisson Becker does, because Alisson Becker is unbelievable. But I think also, a year and a half ago, I think we were all probably sat here saying, oh my God, he's the second, you know, he's the best backup goalkeeper in the league. And I'm not sure you can say that. In fact, you can't say that right now, I don't think. And I don't think it's fully him to blame. He's dropped into a team. He's not in rhythm. So, like, that is very important for a goalkeeper. For, you know, players, midfielders, it's muscle memory. It all comes back to you straight away. With a goalkeeper, it's not like that. You've got to be in those situations to recognise them week in, week out, to know where your positioning should be, to, you know, where you are in the centre of your goal. And yeah, look, you can support a lad and also turn around and be honest and say he wasn't great. I didn't think he was great, but in the end it doesn't matter, because other players have pulled him through that. He makes a good save in the second half, which I don't know when it was, to be perfectly honest.
Is it the Robinson one?
Yes, I think it is. And he gets down quite sharp. And at least he's got that to go off. I'm quite happy he's got something mm-hmm. out of there to go off. And I mentioned it midweek against Lask. He made a brilliant reaction save. And yeah. It's those little moments he needs to make sure that he brings into the next game, so that mentally he isn't all over the place. But the only thing, when I look at him, I just think, you don't look big enough. Like, you need to make yourself big. You need to make yourself opposing. You need to make the attacker think, where the hell can I put this ball? Yeah. And I don't think he's not filled out.
He's not a wall, is he? Like, Alisson is. I agree with that, and that's a physique thing,
exactly.
as well as actually an ability thing. But this is the thing sometimes, Steve, is that people forget how rare really good goalies are, and like we've. You know, in what, 130 odd years of Liverpool Football Club, there's probably been like three or four truly great top of the pile goalkeepers. Really, I mean, you get into a different sport. I think when you get into like pre-60s, so it's harder to judge. But you're talking about like Clement and Alisson loom large in that sort of role. Keller has fine. And there's lots of absolutely fine goalkeepers, but he's more, at the moment, you know, he's more Mignolet than Alisson. And that, what I mean by that is, like, it's like Chris's point, he's a good goalie. We might have to we get used to it. You know, he's not going to be as good as Alisson Becker. If he happens to get better than this, then great, we'll be in a very good position. But it goes back to my starting point of, it is what it is. Your second goalie is never going to be as good as your first choice goalie, and your second choice goalie is certainly never going to be as good as your first choice goalie when your first choice goalie is the best goalie in the world.
And that's, we're all guilty of judging him against the best goalkeeper in the world, and there can only be one best goalkeeper in the world. So I take your point about the presence, the aura. I look at him and I think he looks more like some that our boys own, and he does like Roy the Rovers type of things. And I know he doesn't have it, does he? Now Alisson comes in and straight away everyone stands tall and thinks Alisson's boss, no problem, we've got this. Alisson stands up for the Tete goal, by the way, and that doesn't become a thing. That's just, as you said, if you're not playing every single week, you can't gain muscle memory, you can't gain understanding of the pace of the Premier League. Cup games are very different to the Premier League. You know, the first goal, I don't think you can do much about the first goal. I think there's other players in the team you could look at and say, why does that get to there? I'm a very big, go back to the source of the problem and look at that type of guy. But I think he's okay, he's fine. I don't know whether he's got, I think come the summer we have another conversation about where he sees himself, and we've got the Peter Luka sort of ready to step into those shoes as a number two. So yeah, it's a bit harsh on him, to be fair, but he is what he is. He's a second choice goalkeeper that doesn't play a whole bunch of games.
He's 25 now, and well, this is the turning point of his career. You know, everyone else is a kid. So again, it goes back to the thing. We can go, people can be upset around him and be annoyed with his performance, fine, but actually we've got to trust that he gets better and the coaching staff get around him. And actually, you know, kind of what we've been saying already, Chris, the defence needs to be better, because at least that first one in particular, it's a shot on target from basically inside the 6-yard box. That's criminal defending. It goes between his legs, it is what it is.
I'm sort of torn at the moment on how I actually feel about it, because there's a part of me that thinks 25, you're still young in terms of goalkeeper age, you're probably not young in terms of outfield age anymore, but experience wise he's still a young footballer in terms of first team. You know, he doesn't play under 20 games or anything like that anymore, hasn't done for a little while, so he's not getting that experience week in week out of playing football all the time in competitive games. But there is another part of me that remembers Adrian being in goal for 10 games, and his job's not to win you the league, his job's to make sure you don't lose the league. And I think we're, you know, the difference between that side when Adrian was in goal for those 10 games while Alisson was missing is the defence was much, much better. Like, miles better defensively. We just didn't concede the same amount of shots and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? And we were confident going into it and stuff like that. Whereas Kelleher's job is still the same. It's don't lose us it. And to be fair to him, I think every one of those goals, you know, over the last week or so, you could go, he could do better. But there's no, like, terrible ones there for me, where you look at Onana and go...
Yeah.
So in some ways, as a second goalkeeper coming in, he's doing his job. Yeah. He's not losing us anything.
Yeah.
And I think he deserves maybe a little bit of credit for that, because it would be easy to go in and make mistakes. Mm-hmm. He's not making mistakes.
Yeah.
He's just not as good as Alisson.
97% pass completion on the day as well, which I know a lot of it's just short from goal kicks and stuff, but actually he does still play his way. You know, he's still lobbing stuff over forwards and playing tricky passes and stuff like that. Yeah, it's fine. I just thought it was worth mentioning. I don't think we need to slaughter the goalkeeper anyway, and I think it's one of them that a little bit of just... laissez-faire attitude on it, because what else are we going to do? It's December. Adrian's not coming in, because we know what you're getting with Adrian. And as much as we can remember that he was a real steady-ish pair of hands at the start of that league title win, he's been rubbish since. Like, he cost Liverpool goals in loads of stupid ways since then. And everyone else is a kid, so they're not ready.
You know what I would say is, though, is that, like, the Kelleher from those finals against Chelsea, where he was saving us those games. That's the difference.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, Adrian, where he didn't lose us the title, but in those games, and I know the cup competitions, but it was Chelsea, and Chelsea actually, you know, there was a game there where he could have finished 4-3 or anything like that, 4-4, and it finished 0-0. But you had Kelleher, and he was making himself big. He was unbelievable in those games, and he obviously has the confidence to slot it to win us the Carabao Cup. I just think maybe right now, because he's so in and out the team, and I saw him do a press conference a couple of weeks ago when he was, it must have been one of the first away European games, and he kept being questioned about what his goals are, because you're not going to beat Alisson Becherry, and that was the question posed to him. And right now he was just, well, I just want to focus on the now. I want to be a number one in the future, and I need to focus on how to get there. So I think maybe his performance is actually down to not mentality in a bad way, but a lack of confidence, and the fact that right now, I think he expected to go in the summer. He wanted to go in the summer. Liverpool didn't allow him to. Or we at least came to a kind of conclusion of, oh no, let's spend one more season together because you're guaranteed this.
Yeah.
So I also think that the Kelleher from that Carabao Cup is still there. He just needs to find himself again. He needs to have the belief and confidence. You're not going to get that without rhythm, though, which is why I said him being in and out the team, because you've got Alisson Becker there, just can't have helped him. You saw it against Southampton the last game of the season. It was all over the place, but you just dropped him in a game. Yeah. You can't expect him to be unbelievable.
This is the difference between then and now, and I agree with you, by the way, but the difference is there is no Alisson. There's a pressure that comes with being Liverpool's number one. He was chosen above Alisson in those competitions, and he knew that all the way along, and that's absolutely fine. But he's the number one now because Alisson's injured, and that just mentally is different.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. What was the best goal of the four that we scored, Steve?
It's got to be McAllister's. It's got to be.
Okay. It's ridiculous, by the way.
It's outrageous.
An absolutely ridiculous strike. Are we all in agreement with it?
Yeah, 100% McAllister.
Yeah, good. It's
not even close.
Technique is outrageous.
It's a strike that gets better every time you watch it, because I think we see a lot of those. Like, you see a lot of careless into the top corner. I think that Jordan Henderson's away at Chelsea is probably like the perfect example of that. As good as that type of strike can be, but the fact that it almost bends out, but also manages to maintain its straightness enough. Does it clip on the... It's just... Oh, yeah, okay, I'll have that. Like, if anyone wants to make a case, use the comments underneath.
It's like what you said before, the shape of the ball makes it what it is as well. The ball's coming across him, and he just hits the sweet spot, doesn't he? So he gets all the spin on the ball, and hence his trajectory. But, you know, if you're going to pick your first goal, as Chris said, it might be the best first goal ever scored for a club. If you're going to pick one, you'd pick that one if you could, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I think he came out and said it was his best goal he's ever scored as well, wasn't it? Like, Those are the types that they're just begging to be hit. Those like little half volleys and stuff, aren't they? You don't get them so perfectly set up for you very often.
They're rose headers them all day.
Well, yeah,
because again, when you're trying to curl it, naturally the ball is going down. Whereas when you're hitting it on the volley and you're striking almost across the ball like that, what that ball wants to do is, it doesn't want to go there, it wants to go. It wants to go at a 45 degree angle minimum off and probably curl back over your head while it's doing it. I do feel a little sorry for him in that regard, and probably more over Endo, Chloe, because like, I mean, nobody's talking about them because of the nature, the balance of the game. People will remember McAllister's because it's just such a good goal, but like Endo's one, it's brilliant.
Unbelievable.
And we should be talking about it as the goal of the game, but it's probably the third best strike, and it's the third, it's not, I don't know how you rank them on importance, but ultimately the importance of it is totally overshadowed by Trent scoring the winner.
Yeah, that finish is honestly unbelievable. It's the way, like, he's passed it in, but it's had so much power that it's beat Leno. I don't even feel like it's in top corner, but I think the goalkeeper's just not expecting it to have that much velocity on it to go past him. And Endo, he deserved that moment because, you know, he was boss when he came on, seriously. I remember 2 minutes afterwards, after we get the winner, he's putting in a crunching tackle on someone, and probably the stadium goes more wild for that than it did for his goal.
I'm going to stop you, Chloe. Show of hands, who was happy when Gravenberch comes off and it's Endo who replaces him? Who was happy? Anyone have a little bit of a... Huh?
Oh, I had a big word inside my head with Jürgen. Me and Jürgen were disagreeing with each other quite a lot at the time. Like, because I'm like going, what's he doing? Harvey Elliott's on the bench there. Kerr Jones is on the bench. What's he going to do? And then I turned around to Josh Williams, who was sat next to him at the game. Like, he's got to be throwing Trent Alexander-Arnold further up the field. There's got to be Endo, and and all that type of stuff. And then he comes on, and I'm like, what's he going to do, though, really? Chris, and I'm having this conversation with Jürgen really in my head. I was, what are you going to do?
Jürgen just laughing at you.
What's he going to do? And he's going, no, well, you trust and you need to turn into a believer. He was in this conversation because it makes it better. I'll be honest, I was fuming. I was absolutely fuming with it. And then, 10 minutes later or so, I congratulated Jürgen on a great decision.
Shook hands in your head, yeah.
But it wasn't even his first shot of the game, and though. He gets another one from inside. Yeah, he just before,
and
doesn't he?
Gets blocked and just goes past the post.
I thought that was in. You know when them mad angles where they get a deflection, you just think it's nestling and all that type of stuff. But Chloe's right. The strike's absolutely brilliant. It's not in the top bin, and it's almost why it's not one of the higher ranked goals for me. But it is so under control and so sweetly hit, and it's not rushed for a DM. You'd expect that. You see Robertson rush shots every week while he's in the side.
It was Brendo just,
oh, mate, everything about it.
Go on then. The sub club.
I thought we'd lost a little bit of control. I was like, we've gone to a 44.
So you were happy with the substitution?
I could understand it. That's what I want to say. I was like, Gravenberch has lost his legs completely. In fact, when Sobo went off, I thought it could have been him or Gravenberch. I thought they'd both lost their legs by this point. And bear in mind, I thought Gravenberch had a really, really good first half. Yeah. I thought he just, as his legs went, he faded a little bit. And when Endo came on, in my head, I just kept thinking, we're losing the ball. We've made it a yard dog game where everyone's just chasing things and things aren't sticking to anyone, which is why, I don't know whether we'll mention Cody Gakpo, but I loved when he came on as well because he held the ball up, which was no one else could do. I understood it, but I also did sit there and think, Harvey Elliott and Curtis. And I just assumed, well, it's because we're going hell for leather, we're going out for the win, we need to come back, we need to get the win. Anything but 3 points here is absolutely horrific, which means put a DM on and make sure Trent just pushes right up the pitch, and you've got basically Endo, Virgil, Canate, good luck, and the rest of yous all just move up there. So I understood it in the moment. I didn't actually question it, I don't think, which was a bit mad.
I was all right with it at the time because Gravenberch has mentioned he just stopped being able to close it down. He just looked absolutely done. And as much as I think in my head prior to that, I was thinking probably get Curtis on here because it's just a natural swap, isn't it? But as soon as I saw Endo warming up, I was like, cool, because we could just do with winning the ball here. Because the only way we're going to actually win this game is if we keep the ball in their half of the pitch. And the best way to do that is have someone who can actually get over and tackle and wants to get in the faces a little bit. Stay, you were watching it at home. How was your reaction to it?
I thought you could see, as everybody else has said, Gravenberch was done, needed to come off. He just wasn't really giving us anything. Interesting, I've seen the thing Josh said, that Endo's become a guy who likes to pick the ball up on the half turn. And we needed that, to be fair. And he gets the ball and gives it to people very quickly who can do the damage, whereas Curtis tends to hang on a little bit at times. We've all discussed about Curtis's decision-making when he keeps the ball for too long, where he doesn't see a pass quick enough. Endo doesn't really want the ball. He wants to win it back, get it on the half-turn, create a bit of space and then give it to somebody like a Trent playing in a more advanced position, in previous games, like a Szoboszlai or to a Salah. So I think the urgency came back into the side a little bit because that's what he wants to do. He knows he's not going to carry the ball for 40 yards and beat a man. That's not his game. So I think It's a questionable one because it's not really an attack-minded decision, but it ends up being exactly that. So it's kind of
weird.
That
was the main criticism I had from people around me of, like, you're chasing a game, what are you bringing a defensive midfielder on for? But, of course, the players we had on the pitch didn't make sense at that point anyway. You know,
it felt, honestly, and I stand by this because obviously I was talking about, you know, what I felt like in the game there. It felt like Klopp was rectifying an earlier mistake. And I think the earlier mistake was taking McAllister off and not Gravenberch. Uh-huh. Because, you know, you referenced it, everyone's referenced it. We lost control when McAllister went off the field.
Yeah.
And it was like, shit, I've gone too far here. I need to bring that balance back by putting Endo on.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting call. I thought the comparison actually between Gravenberch and Szoboszlai is really interesting. And look, it's weird. I feel like we've been quite negative on this so far in a game at Liverpool. You know, it's going to be one of my favourite wins of the season. There's very little, it's going to take a lot to top that feeling. But Dominic Szoboszlai, I want to talk about, Chris, because I think quietly he's in a little bit of a bad run of form for us, and I've got SofaScore up, and interesting that SofaScore gave him a 7.3 rating to Gravenberch, a 6.7, but the heat maps tell me why you already knew about both their performances. I felt like our left hand side of the pitch was working really well, but our right side was a bit dysfunctional. Now, match of the day, and everyone does the analysis, always go, well, Trent's moving out, and it's like, yawn, I know, but I don't think Szoboszlai did enough going back the other way, and I actually don't think Salah did enough going back the other way as well. Salah had another poor game. Szoboszlai didn't really have loads of tangible impact. I mean, he wins the free kick for the Trent scores, which is fair, and he's fine in a neat and tidy way, but it feels like, I think of the two, particularly first half, I thought Gravenberch was much better than him. He definitely faded, but it feels a bit like, I think we need to be careful with him. We've obviously played him a lot. He's not being less this explosive impact, I think, in the last few games that I was hoping for.
We were talking about it on the way home from the game. I think he's just gone off the boil a little bit, to be honest with you. I think, you know, we're getting to that stage now where when we watch Liverpool attack, I can start to see that one touch, two touch football coming back in the attacking third, and that's really exciting. And what normally happens, I think back to, you know, when Bobby and Salah and Mane started to do it, is it doesn't work for a bit, but you can see they're trying it, and then all of a sudden that timing just becomes perfect and it starts to work. For the first half, I felt like that we were getting that down that right-hand side, but Szoboszlai kept letting us down with the back heels and those little flicks around the corner that were just a foot away from the man. The timing wasn't quite there. So I think he's seeing the game. I just don't think he's quite executing at the moment, and that normally is probably a tiredness thing, I think, for me. So, but Gravenberch, brilliant in the first half, but I do have to say, this is a continued trend that I'm seeing now, week in, week out with Gravenberch. He doesn't put 90 minutes together, or I should say, he hasn't put 90 minutes together. I still believe that he can do, and he's an absolute threat whenever he's on the ball. He just scares teams. He just drives at them, and he panics them, and he changes the landscape. When he picks the ball up, by the time he's driven 10, 15 yards, the entire game's changed in front of him.
It's actually very...
And it's creating space, and it's gone.
It's very... like he's got like the... He's doing the Wijnaldum-y things right, I think, in terms of box-to-box, but that's a very Naby Keita trait.
Well, it's an Oxlade-Chamberlain 17-18 thing for me, and I've said this for a few weeks now, and, you know, it does... Everything just changes, and yeah, Naby had a little bit of it and stuff like that, but I want to see him be able to do it for 90 minutes. That's what I need to see next from him. So I think that was the midfield that I was excited to see, and I'm glad that we got to see it, but I don't think the right hand side's quite working as well as the left, and I think that's a little bit down to Mo and his form at the moment. I think that's a little bit down to Szoboszlai maybe not being quite at it at the moment, and I think there's also that adaptation maybe of Trent's positioning is changing that right hand side, and at least my understanding of how that's supposed to work, because I knew how it worked with Henderson and Trent and Salah for years.
That's the most minutes he's played in a football match for us this season, Gravenberch. And the only one that matches that is Luton at 83, but I couldn't tell you what the injury time was in the first half of the Luton game, so it says 83 minutes on here, but in reality it's more like
98 minutes, I think, in the first half that we ended up playing.
Yeah, so this is probably his first full game of football.
It was the longest first half of football I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It felt like it.
Yeah, particularly when the lads were passing the ball around themselves for 5 minutes.
Honestly, you know, we talk about the adaptation for like the right hand side. I was talking about it then. Like, there's people there who just need to sort the pints out at half time because they're still going down on 38 and they're missing like 20 minutes of the match.
Yeah.
Like, people just need to get their head around this. Like, and again, like the people who. I was laughing at the amount of people that left on 80.
Yeah.
Laughing at them. Just ridiculous.
It's fucking stupid. What are you doing? It's beyond stupid. I would contend, because again, look, I'm not going to get into this because I'm sure someone, there's always someone who can give me a great reason. There'll be someone in the comments going, but my wife was giving birth. Like, yeah, you, not you. Not you. You don't care. You shouldn't have been at the match in the first place if that's the case. But it's like anything, like, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Rafa Benitez wouldn't have been happy with you, but, you know, Jürgen would. Yeah, you know, oh, I've got to get me train. Like, do something else. You know what I mean? Don't come. You know, if you can't get back, don't come, or find some way to stay longer. It's mad. Because you're right, this side, what is that now? It's at least 12 points we've recovered from losing positions. That's probably 15 now, is that?
Yeah, maybe 15.
It was 12 during that game, so it would have been 15, I guess, because we were behind. So, like, what do you, yeah, just stay. I get it. I know I get it. If you're a Liverpoolian or in the surrounding areas of Liverpool and you come every week and somehow that's like, it's part of your routine. I know. Nah. Alex Iwobi or Vinicius Jr.? Anyone?
Still Vinny.
Fuck it. No, I mean, like, what?
Yeah. We made him look incredible.
That's what I'm timing for. So fucking sure. Alex Iwobi. Can I just say, like, the most... you know when you're like an ex-Everton player and he's probably coming into this game going, I'm going to get absolutely slaughtered here. I want to watch out, ex-Blue, true Blue. And like...
Nobody even gives.
I don't think anyone even realised he played for Everton. You know, I think he got a half-hearted blue and white shy from about seven people on the cop in the first couple of minutes and that was it.
To be fair, I feel like he pissed them off anyway, so I'm quite happy with him, to be honest.
So your point before about Szoboszlai, so what they did was they pushed... A lot of times he pushed Iwobi into the space where they expected Trent to be, and that affected Szoboszlai because that's in the vicinity of. And then when Trent's not there, he's getting an extraordinary amount of time on the ball because you made the point he didn't think Szoboszlai or Salah worked hard enough going back towards the goal. So by the way we played, those two guys in particular, Trent and Szoboszlai, and then obviously Salah didn't track too much, he's got ridiculous amount of time on the ball and he will look good given that opportunity. I think we helped him look anything like a footballer, which he's never looked like before, by the way.
Yeah, fair play. Their last side was good. You, I don't want to talk too much about it because, you know, I'd rather talk about us, but Robinson, the left-back, Pereira was really good as well. Iwobi was really good.
Raul Jimenez, I thought he was absolute dog crap, and then he came to Anfield and won every header I've ever seen.
Yeah, Robinson was the one where I walked away going, he's a player, him. Like, he actually reminded me of Andy Robertson loads. Like, he was just everywhere. It's like, he did brilliantly against Salah, and yet did brilliantly against Kostas. Normally, I think left-backs have to pick one or the other, don't they? Either if you're going to defend Salah, you've got to stay back. It's not often they defend Salah and get forwards and cause you a threat. He's the one who Kelleher makes the save from Robinson.
Yeah.
That low down at his left-hand side. He set up Harry Wilson's goal. There was something else he was majorly involved with as well. I just thought he was everywhere. Like, I thought he was absolutely brilliant.
He gets marks down for spelling his first name with two E's instead of a Y, though. So, him and Pereira. That was the thing where...
I mean, he didn't have the worst hairdo on the field.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
No, Darwin Nunes.
Oh dear.
So I did get, I put that out pre-match and had a couple of people going like, oh, I fucking got over you. You're fucking trouble here, blah, 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 blah. I was like,
it matters.
There comes a point where, honestly, I think he'll be a better centre forward if someone just gives him a skinhead. If someone just goes in there, and you know, even if it's like a moment where he's in front of the mirror and he ends up, his blood coming dripping down, and he walks out, just he looked fucking stupid. And if you're gonna, and this is Liverpool, by the way, and look, where you know people can be who they want to be, but if you're gonna be who you want to be at Liverpool Football Club, you need to be brilliant at football. Like Lucas Leiva came into the football club with white boots and long hair and an Alice band. Nope.
And there's still people who never forgive.
No, no. There is a subsection of our fan base that has never let him forget that John Aldridge being proprietor number one on Radio City every time Lucas got the ball. Yeah, you've got to earn the right. Like Trent's currently wearing white Predators, and fair play, mate, because you're absolutely rocking them. Jude Bellingham's doing the same. Black Predators, whoa, class, yeah, absolutely amazing. You can't have braids and pigtails playing for. And this is not like, look again. I'm very aware you're in danger of this sounding like it's a tirade against something else. It's really not. His hair just looks shit, and he just needs to fuck. If you're spending that much time thinking about your haircut, then you need to just fucking get rid of it. And start
scoring
some
goals. Any time thinking about his haircut.
Oh, that's
what's gone wrong.
You've braided hair before, Chris. That's not
that's
an easy quick
decision
fix.
To
that,
do
like,
that,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
He did have short hair for a little while at Benfica, and
but I think that was on the pathway to
I
like.
I don't know, but I didn't like his hairdo anyway. Him holding the fish, that famous photo in pre-season, I just thought, oh my god, and I assumed warrior mentality. Maybe that's what he's going for. I've got no idea what I saw on Sunday to do with it. It made me absolutely howl, but I did think to myself, if you just go with the short hair that you had, turn into.
Can I give you something here? Ronaldo rocks up for World Cup 2002
with a bit on the
shaved up to the front, and he's got that stupid little wedge on the front of his head. But he just absolutely bosses the World Cup. He's absolutely amazing. Yeah. So you go, yeah, fair enough. And I remember as a lad I played footy with, and he turned up one day. I think he'd gotten pissed the night before. We must have been 16. And he turned up and he basically had the Ronaldo cup, but he had longer hair. So effectively it was like a centre parting, but he had this thing up here. And he got onto the pitch, he got ripped by the opposition, but he just decided he was going to chip the keeper. And he had four goes of chipping the keeper. On the fourth go, he chipped the keeper and ran away and scored, and we won the game. Fair play, mate. Have whatever hair style you want, Darwin, but you've got to take those two chances. Don't rattle the bar, stick it in. And that one where it dropped in Salah, like inspirational header forward for him. And you know, yeah,
that it's not often on a football field when you had the view that I had, it, which was main stand up for yesterday's game, that you're surprised by a pass. Normally you can see much better than the people on the field. I honestly couldn't see Salah's header to Darwin Nunes. I just couldn't see it coming.
Yeah.
It was so Diaz it was going to on the left-hand side. It took me completely by surprise. And unfortunately, I don't think I was the only one, Darwin, was I? Because you just didn't get onto it. Like, it's a shocker, to be honest with you. I am starting to get a little bit annoyed by it, shall we say.
Your point was, can I reiterate your point?
Of course.
Maybe we should stop chanting support of Nunes when he misses.
No, what I said was, I'm all for chanting Nunes' name in support of him, but I would much rather chant it when he scored a fucking goal.
I agree. Yeah.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
And I stand by that. And it's totally true. I really would much rather chant his name when he scored a goal.
The one where he hits the bar and everyone's like, Nunes, Nunes. And then he misses the second one and everyone's like, no, we're not even singing at this time.
Nunes.
It's become a thing where he's trying really hard, but it's not quite there. So we'll give him some,
yeah.
get behind him and give him some support. Robbie Fowler's had pelters this week for coming out and saying he's 18 months into his Liverpool career. We're waiting for him to explode, and he should have done it by now. And he's had a lot of stress and grief because of that. I'm in total agreement. He could have won that game by himself.
He's on track, I was looking into the numbers for another video, but he's on track to basically have more goals and more assists than Bobby Firmino did in 18-19 for what he's doing so far this season.
Forward. He's the Salah of this side.
Yeah. Well, yeah, sort of. It's those chances, I agree. There's going to come a point where we've tried being supportive. Maybe we just need to try being a bit more annoyed and being like, just stick the ball in the back of the net.
We've given the carrot, now it's time for the stick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I really want him to succeed, and I really like him. I love the endeavour that he showcases every single time he takes the field. I love the fact that he seems to get it and everything else for it. And pardon?
The passion.
The passion, yeah, absolutely. But I am starting to worry about whether he's ever going to get those goals that you count on him to get, because like I made the point yesterday, and it looks stupid after the Manchester City game. Said Haaland walks away with a hat trick there, but the point is he's averaging 1.2, 1.3 shots per 90 more than Erling Haaland, and has 10 goals less than him in the Premier League so far this season. He is dominating our shot count week in, week out. Now, I think he only had 3. I think Diaz had 5 in yesterday's game, so he actually didn't yesterday. But actually, I thought that was because he was a little too tentative in the first half and probably should have had a couple more shots than he actually ended up taking and stuff. Now, there's going to come a point where Liverpool, I think, and maybe it's at the end of this season, if it carries on the same, where they go, it's time to spin the wheel again.
Yeah.
Because it's great, this. It looks really good, but I need a centre forward to score 30 goals a season.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be Salah forever. And Darwin is the focal point, and Bobby Firmino wasn't the focal point of that side. And so, listen, it sounds harsh because, you know, he's playing well and his all-round game's getting better, but he's in there to score goals, and he's not scored in 6 games for us.
It's a you can see the pathway of mentality with the 3 shots. He has the first one, he doesn't quite get it away from the man, it's blocked. The second one, he absolutely blams it, so it hits the crossbar. And then our third one, I mean, that's actually weirdly the more difficult of them lot. It's coming on to him, it's kind of on his left foot, so he sweeps at it and misses it. But he's clearly in his own head a little bit by that point, because now I've got to take this one, and it's a rampant pressure, whereas there is just something to, you know, Erling Haaland, again, knock out on the weekend's game where his head completely falls off, which is fucking hilarious, because someone points out it looks like the Atalanta badge when he's storming off the pitch, which is absolute perfection, by the way. Honestly, Google it. He looks like the Atalanta badge.
Yeah, just thought about what that was. Yeah. Yeah, that's brilliant.
But like, it needs to be more of a process. The ball stops, I just smack the ball. This is how I hit the ball in these kind of situations. Torres was more like that, feels more clinical. Go on, Claire.
The one in the first half, which I think you're thinking of, where he's literally in behind, he's on his right foot, and it took me back to Newcastle, where I was like, yeah, lads, just literally hit it across goal. That's the goal that you've scored, like, you know, 3-4 times a season, and they've all been unbelievable. And you're closer to the goal, and instead he tries to pull it back for either Salah or someone else. But in that moment, you're screaming to him, be selfish. You're the number 9. You're literally just kick it across goal, and it's a goal. It's a nailed on goal. And I think he has the self-doubt in that one. And I think because everyone then's like, what the hell are you doing? Why aren't you shooting? The second one in the second half, he stutters, doesn't take it first time, and everyone's like, why haven't you taken that first time? So then the second one he has, where like he belts it off the bar, he's put so much behind it because he didn't hit it first time, the first
and
one.
This is the thing, it's inventing strikes on the fly. And Mane was a bit like that, to be fair. You know, like, you know, you can never rely on Sadio Mane if he was in a decent scoring opportunity to be the guy who buried it. I think that Napoli game where, you know, it's Becker saved that actually gets us through. Mane should have had a hat-trick in that game, and we should have been dead and buried long before we got there. That was just a bit of a difference. But this is the thing, but Balotelli had a bit of this too. I mean, he's a much worse footballer than Balotelli, horrendously bad footballer. But he always felt like he was just going, I'll just try this and see what happens. I was like, nah, it just needs to be. And look, I'd still bank him to to come, because again, he is getting into the right positions. He is scoring goals. Okay, he's having a little bit of a dry spell at the moment. He does need a goal.
He's at least influenced some players.
I think you look at yesterday's game, for instance. We spoke at the start of the show about, is there a game with four better goals, and is it a classic because of the four goals and the way that they were? It's taken four worldies to get him off the hook, because he's had two gilt-edged chances.
Yeah.
If we don't score those goals and we lose, who's to talk about today?
Yeah, the one in particular, the one that hits the bar, like the pass from Salah is perfect. Yeah. It's like it couldn't be better weighted. He arrives at the time when you just got to kick it past the goalie, and you're a centre forward, and yeah, being too emphatic, and God knows we've all done it on.
I don't think he knows what he is in terms of his finishing style. I don't think he's got it in his mind what he is.
Emi Alescu was a bit like that as well, you know, wasn't he? You know, he could never decide whether he wanted to just absolutely leather it. And the moment he's decided to start being having a bit more finesse was the treble season and beyond, where he scored goals in absolutely.
I think Chloe's point's really good about how every chance seems to sort of impact the next finish, whereas like you think it's always used about goalkeepers, just forget it. You know what I mean? A lily goalkeeper just forgets the mistake and just cracks on. But it all does seem to just build up on him, doesn't it? And he is in his own head. And listen, I do hope that it clicks, because we saw the amount of goals that he got for Benfica in that season where it clicks. So you know that he can do it. But it also, you know, to Robbie Fowler's point, I suppose, that you brought up before, we are 18 months in. I kind of expected it to click by now. And I'm not, it sounds terrible because it sounds like I'm in a bad mood with him and all that type of stuff, but I'm not, because I think his all-round game's like really improved. But it does make me think, can Liverpool win the league with him playing like this?
Good point. Your point about maybe spinning the wheel in the summer. We're a prolific goal scorer away from dominating, because we're creating chances in games. He's not taking them. There's, you know, you look at City, 7 goals conceded against Chelsea and then obviously at the weekend. We didn't open up and our number 9 didn't say, right, I'm gonna have a go at these. He didn't do it. Yeah. I don't think he knows what he is. And whilst he doesn't know what he is, he's not going to score his goals at win football matches.
I also don't think he was helped because Salah was appalling, and Luis Diaz, I was so frustrated with how bad Luis Diaz was as well. So it wasn't just him. The entire front three were absolutely stunk the gaff out, really. Salah still comes away with an assist, and Darwin comes away with 2 pre-assists in terms of the knockdown for, you know, Salah to then pass it to Endo is really good. And he's put a ball in the box for the second one where Trent scores, but still he's alive to it. But I'll slightly let him off the hook for this one. The Luton one, I couldn't really let him off the hook. It's literally a sitter. Like, you should be a goal poacher. All 3 of them were crap up top. So I assume the fact that Luis Diaz wasn't having his best game, and the fact that Mo Salah wasn't having his best game, and the fact that none of them helped each other.
Well, we talked about this before. You know, in Liverpool's pomp under Klopp, you had 3 guys who were all on their best seasons, 20 goal a season forwards playing in a front three. So if one didn't get you, one of the other two would get you. We've changed that now. We've now got a 20 plus goal a season forward in Salah. You've then got 15 to 20 in Darwin Nunes, you've probably got a 10 to 15 max probably in Diaz on that side, but we've actually bought midfielders who hopefully pick up the slack in replacement of that, because we can't replace what that front three is. And that's, you know, again, the beauty of the squad. This wasn't, you know, when Scott McTominay scores for Man United a couple of weeks ago, you go, well, that's not solving any of their problems, because he's never going to be the guy whose goals are going to solve your problem. Whereas if Trent Alexander-Arnold's scoring a goal, okay, yeah, then though maybe less of an issue in this. But, you know, if McAllister's scoring goals, you know he's got goals in him. There's more goals to come from him. There's more goals to come from Trent. Szoboszlai should be scoring more goals. Gravenberch, because as already scored goals, can get more goals. That's good. It's a positive, nothing else. I want to move on. I want to show you, just for those of you who haven't been bothered to Google it, there is the Atalanta badge, if anyone's wondering. It's just absolute Erling Haaland storm off perfection.
I was going to mention, actually, when we were talking about Nunes' hair, that he's got the second worst hair out of the elite strikers in the Premier League.
After Haaland?
Haaland's is terrible, man. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
When he's
ready for the match, I've got no problems with it. It's when he takes the fucking thing bobble out. I don't know what, he looks like a fucking Barbie doll that's been ragged around by a 3-year-old for 6 months.
He's weird Barbie, isn't he?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just weird, man.
Yeah. But again, If you're gonna have a weird haircut, score 50 goals a season.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
it's fine,
do what you want to do.
Tell you what, son, you can keep your hair.
Yeah, honestly, he can do what he wants. He can tie around his armpits if he wants to.
It's when the ball's added to you in the box, you don't even connect with it. Your haircut comes under scrutiny even more, doesn't it?
Yeah. On the Man City thing, we're going to be doing more on them drawing with Tottenham Hotspur on the Bias Football Podcast, which follows this over on RedmanPlus.com. So join us for that one, of course. Up to second in the league, Steve Plunkett. How are you feeling?
Yeah, we're ahead of schedule, if there is such a thing as a schedule. It's a weird season, isn't it, where no one really wants to grab the bull by the horns, but, you know, take it. You would think we can only get better in terms of we're like, what, 15, 16 games into this project, and we are where we are. So, yeah, keep going. Find someone who can get us a few goals, have a prolific streak. You know, it's where we're going to probably miss Jota because he is a bit more prolific, isn't he? We're in it and we deserve to be in it. And I think if we just believe it, and it's a mad thing to say because we've turned into doubters to believers, but if we can, a few of the lads can push on and have a bit more self-belief and put teams to the sword, we should be right there at the mix in the end.
We have this every season, and you know, every football team has this every season as you come into this period, and moreover when we have a successful season, Chloe, is that players are tested, you have injuries, you lose players, and other lads have got to step up, you know, and Kelleher is part of that. You know, Luis Diaz is going to get more game time now with no Jota available. If he wants to hold down that role, he's going to have to score some more goals. I think he's done okay. He's actually unlucky not to get one with a header as well, you know, in the game at the weekend.
It's a good save, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, and obviously Darwin as well. But this is the point. Players have got to rise to the challenge. If they rise to the challenge, Liverpool are going to be right in the mix. And so far, they've all risen pretty well to it. So yeah, I don't know about you, but I just feel really calm about the whole thing. If I'm honest, I genuinely believe we're pretty good. It's the first time I've really thought it was. I've actually wanted to really talk about it again because everything's kind of been up in the air. City never really gave us that firm, like, wow, it's definitely on kind of moment. And look, conceding 3 goals at home to Fulham and needing worldies to win it isn't necessarily the one. But I don't know. I'm feeling quite content when I look at the table at the moment because I'm not as scared of Arsenal as I am of Manchester City.
No, that's it. And I think why I was all over the shop in terms of emotions for that Fulham game is because, like we mentioned, the next 3 games, which were Fulham, Sheffield United and Crystal Palace, are all winnable games. Liverpool should take maximum points. And if you take maximum points out of them, City had to play Spurs and they've got to play Villa midweek.
Yeah.
So
with no Rodri.
So it very much felt like at 3-2 down, you thought to yourself, no, like you lose here at home to Fulham, and there is a point when you get to the likes of Arsenal, Manchester United. There is a point, but it just feels like if you beat Arsenal at Anfield, but you drop points to Fulham, like you need them both to go hand in hand. You need you can't beat the big teams and the teams challenging and then drop points along the way to teams that you should be putting to the sword.
Those are top 4 challenging seasons, exactly. Chris, what Chloe's talking about there.
That's absolutely right, isn't it? I mean, obviously you draw against Luton, you draw against Manchester City, and then this draw against City is almost rendered completely pointless. Not pointless because you get a point, but you know what I mean.
Jesus.
Because you go and don't win against Fulham, but thankfully it's not. And in sort of answer to your question to Chloe and to Steve, for myself, I think I'm more stressed about it now because I think I can see a clear pathway, like a really clear pathway to winning the league, because I don't think City are as good, and I think that does have to do with Kevin De Bruyne not being in the side, I think, consistency wise and all that type of stuff. They're not quite there yet. I still think they'll get there. So it's about just taking every little advantage that you can get at this point of the season. And that's why I'm maybe being hypercritical over the likes of Darwin Nunes and Diaz and Salah's form over the last few months, because I feel like it's on this year, and like I'm heightened. I'm like anxious about it again, because that's good. That's an important part of building a league title or building a side that can challenge, isn't it? When every little detail, you walk away with 3 points, you should be absolutely on cloud nine. And I'm looking at it going, we need to be better there. We need to be better there, because I really do think Liverpool can win the league.
We know what we're up against. We've been there before. We know what it takes to beat Manchester City, and it is near impossible, to be perfectly honest. You feel like every single time you kick off, you have to be perfect for the full 90 whatever minutes. If you have one lull in the game, it can completely turn the title. And that's the thing, is that I think we've all spoken about, and why I felt so emotional for the 4-3 was because the season we did win the league, it was never say die, it was the never give up attitude, it was players, it was heroes. Andy Robbo against Aston Villa, let's go back, go and get the second. It was the fighting for everyone and always believing. And we've had that at times. Wolves, we had it. Andy Robbo popped up again there, by the way. You had it against Newcastle, where Darwin Nunes just produces a moment of absolute magic twice in the game to save you. We've gone behind against the likes of Bournemouth at home, I think it was. We've Aston Villa, who's tearing everyone apart, we just put them to the side and beat them 3-0. We annihilated them. Yeah, we absolutely killed them. And I think that's why, because we've always sat here and we've said, draws is what will kill Liverpool, because you can't. We draw too many games. We don't lose that often, but we draw too many games. And we've somehow went from turning a loss into a draw. Actually, no, we've turned a loss into a win.
Yeah.
And that's why it feels massive. It feels like against City, it was a 1-1, and yet you scored the last goal, but it felt very much like, nah, I mean, do we actually, but we might need to beat them to actually win the league. With that, then, that went from we've lost the league to, you know what, this is going to get on Manchester City's minds. We've just put ourselves back up there. That is something that gives us the atmosphere for Manchester United when we come back to Anfield.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And that's it builds, and it will build.
I just like the fact that people are still talking about Arsenal and talking about Man City, and Arsenal being top of the league is, I'm
kind of forgot
honestly fine with it. I really am, because I look at it and, well, again, we'll talk about Arsenal on the Bias Football Podcast, but they are doing similar things. You know, they're finding ways to win. They've had a few late wins as well, turned a few bits and pieces around. They did that loads last season. But it still comes back to, for me, Steve, is when the chips are down, we've now got a bunch of young players in our team as well, but our team isn't built around them still. You know, we've actually got quite a nice blend of, if something does need to be dug deep, well, we have still got those world-class guys who've been there and done it. And even then, right in the middle, we haven't really talked about Trent. You've got a 25-year-old Trent Alexander-Arnold being unleashed, it's his football club. He's the heir to the captain's armband. And he's also won absolutely everything. This is not, and like, I'd pick a name out the hat, but like Martin Odegaard or whatever, who is obviously a fantastic player, a good leader in and of himself. But when you want to turn to someone in on the pitch who's going to be a guy who grabs it, someone who's at the peak of the powers and has got a track record of grabbing a game, is only going to help you through those situations.
Absolutely. And this season, more than any other, we talked before about, you have to be nearly perfect. You have to get 97, 98 points. Maybe you don't this season because all teams are dropping points, draws, surprising draws and things like that. Imagine having this squad with the capabilities and the ability that's in this squad and coming up short in when 88, 89 points does it for you. That'd be like harder to take than the 97 season. So you're right, this is probably Trent's moment to deliver in the midfield and be the catalyst and be the scouser in the team and be all the things where it means so much more to him. You can see that from the celebration. You know, Odegaard celebrates his goals. He doesn't celebrate them with the fans who are from the same city and share the same love for the football club. This is his watershed moment in his career where he might be the catalyst for something brilliant.
This is that age, though. Again, 25. This is Gerrard, around the period Gerrard's, you know, his stamp, it's post 2003, 2004. This is like prime age. And that moment, though, Chris, it's just incredible. It means more to me that it's him, because of it's him and he's a scouser, and it means so much more to him as well. That celebration, because the first one, he scores the free kick, and it's not given as his goal, which is just one of those like quirks of fate, really, isn't it? But he does like the little like cheeky little, you know, finger. That one, he just doesn't know what to do with himself. He throws himself on the floor.
He gets away like Gerrard, doesn't he, to begin with, and then he just slides over the floor. And you know, obviously, I've watched it back from the telly and stuff. It's the pure emotion on his face. It gets me. it gets me right in the feels, and it always will do. And whether they're from Liverpool or whether they're from, you know, Uruguay, Chile, it doesn't matter if they've got that pure emotion, and Trent's got that pure emotion. But it is, it hurts, it gets me more because he is from Liverpool, because it's every young lad's dream or young girl's dream from around here to be able to do that. And so to have someone who, you know, is lambasted in the media time and time again, who's able to step up and continue to prove people wrong and steps up for the right reasons, and, you know, because he wants to do, because he loves the football club, it's just brilliant to see. And like, it's such an underrated, like, we didn't even really talk about the fourth goal.
No, it's good.
The first touch is slightly behind him and he has to like check his body and swivel on it, and it's just perfect.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing about it that I think everyone should just be a little bit scared of is the fact that we're playing a number 8 as our number 6. And right now we're second in the league. Yeah. Can you just imagine when we're rotating McAllister, Curtis Jones, Gravenberch on that left-hand side? You've obviously got Sobber, you've got Elliot on the right-hand side. You could even, you know, put Trent in there if you really wanted. I hope we will get an out and out number 6 who maybe isn't on the same level as Rodri is the best in the world, but his known position is winning the ball back, is doing exactly what Rodri does, is knowing that position. Like, Liverpool are doing this with a makeshift midfield in terms of putting McAllister there. They're doing it with right now Costas at left back, and sometimes the likes of Joe Gomez at right back when we need, you know, we're doing it with Sobo, who's still trying to learn what it is to work under Jurgen Klopp.
We started with 3 new signings in midfield.
Exactly.
At the weekend.
And the fact that we're still second with all these moving parts and it being the beginning of Klopp 2.0, Liverpool 2.0, it's a little bit scary for the rest of us, because when we actually nail down those positions and when they're all in rotation and when they know exactly how to play Jurgen's way and what he wants out of them every single game, it's scary for all of the other teams.
2 goals, 5 assists for Trent so far this season.
3 goals.
Yeah, I know. If only. But to the point, you know, he's our joint second top assistor. Darwin Núñez has got 5 as well so far. I think it's our 4th highest in terms of total goal contributions from the side. And as much as you're saying, yeah, we've got a guy who's nominally an 8 to 10 playing in the 6 for us, we've got a guy who could be a 6 to 8 playing right back, you know, and actually trying to get into flourish more. Another interesting move to move him into midfield and put Gomez into right back when we're chasing the game. We've seen that a couple of times now this season. I think we're going to start to see more and more of that, and some of that will be born of just, you know, the situations around, but we're going to have that question in January of, is it easier to buy a world-class number 6 or a world-class right-back? I think that might be a conversation that is starting to happen in and around the AXA for Liverpool, and, you know, do you move Trent further up the pitch? I don't know. I do find the argument
I think I'm right in saying he won the ball back more than any other player for Liverpool last night as well.
Yeah.
So again, you know, you constantly think about him in the defensive side of things, but winning the ball back still.
And again, second in the league.
It's interesting what you've just said, because if you push Trent into midfield, he becomes an orthodox man-for-man pawn in a chess game, if you like, because he comes from right back into that midfield. Invariably, there's nobody to pick him up, and then when somebody does pick him up, it frees up another body. If you just put him into midfield, you lose that surprise element, and then you've got to bring another right back into the squad. Like, Joe Gomez can't do the inverted thing, so if, as long as you're doing, well, he can, but not to the same effect.
Yeah,
if you're doing the inverted thing, then surely Trent has to stay in that position.
You know, Conor Bradley's back now, you know, and it's interesting that, you know, whether we see, and look, Matip's injury is a blow, and Jurgen Klopp said it's not going to be a short one, that, so there's a chance that that's a long layoff for Matip, which will impact things. Mercifully, Quanta's, you know, development's been excellent as well, but that we might see something change in the coming weeks as a result of it, because I think Gomez has been excellent at right back. I really do. You know, he's obviously very stable, he's so good on the ball as well, underratedly so, and actually when we let him play as a flying fullback, He really is underrated when he gets into the final third for us. You know, he's not gonna get 15 assists a season from pinpoint whipped crosses and stuff, but he's got pace. He's got good close control. He's an asset. Right, look, we're gonna have to wrap up on that because we've gone super long on it. But so good. so good. And I'm glad to see everyone vibing off all the good goals and all that kind of stuff, and all the content from yesterday as well. So yeah, fill your boots on all the over on YouTube if you want to. Short break. Now when we return, we're going to be looking at the FA Cup third round draw and a little word on Liverpool versus Sheffield United as well. Hey, yes, there we've got a fantastic set of competitions all the way up to Christmas Day over on redmenplus.com, as I handily mentioned there. As mentioned, I've literally just filmed that live, as you can tell by the outfit that I'm wearing. There is a draw basically every day, and the days when we can't do them, we'll do a double draw. So we've got a fresh graphic made, which Aaron is going to shortly pull up and go on screen. There we go. So on the 5th, the Darwin Núñez Christmas sweatshirt is going to be drawn on the Sheffield United match preview. On the 6th, the 5-goal wins mug will be drawn on the Sheffield United match build-up. Yeah, cool. We've got a signed copy of Spice Up Your Life by Jonathan Asfey, which is on the Crystal Palace match preview. Beers Manfield Road beer mats on the Palace match preview as well. And then Jack Design's Alison Becker poster coming on the 9th of December. We've also still got, obviously, the Dirk Kuyt shirt. We've got the Ibu Konate shirt. We've got the Carragher programme, possibly, I think, as well. But yeah, head over to redmenplus.com and sign up and yeah, get yourself involved in the draws like we did at the top of this show. I missed a couple of super chats as well before we talk about the FA Cup draw. Imran Adam, Imi says, I went to bed last night and still felt the need to let out a big scream of get in there, Liverpool. Yeah, I think there was a lot of that doing around me. Ashley Frith, who's been a member for 41 months, says, this has quickly become my favourite Red Men show. I mean, we've been doing it for quite a while.
About 12 years.
That's a glacial turn of enjoyment there, Ashley. Anyone heard of Micah using Gerrard's boots and smashing it happening to Trent? I have not heard that, but go ahead, why not? And Redo just sent us a pound super chat in and a little number one sticker. Get in. Okay, FA Cup draw. Let's focus on Liverpool first and foremost. Chris Pajak. Arsenal away.
Whoop-de-doo.
About as bad as it gets, that.
Yep. Yeah. How does it always happen to us that we seem to draw these types of sides? There's always a period, isn't it? You mentioned that yesterday, there's like Arsenal or Chelsea, but there was always a period where it seemed to be United in the fourth round or something like that. The third and fourth round, we very rarely get through without seeing a Premier League side. It baffles me, to be honest with you, and it annoys the living daylight out of me, but... And there's the other party, you knock them out and the draw probably opens up in much the same way as the Carabao opened up for us this year, didn't it? Where you're thinking, oh, we can go all the way to the final there. And I'm a little bit annoyed, to be honest, because we'll have played so much football by the time that the FA Cup rolls around, and hopefully we'll be preparing to play Carabao Cup football as well around then. So it is a bit annoying. I just like, you know, who did City get, Paul?
Obviously Huddersfield.
There you go. We've had decent
luck in the last few years, haven't we, Steve? You know, in terms of the draws. I mean, I feel like we've played Shrewsbury about 14 times of late. But this is often the thing. If you want to have a good domestic cup run.
What's the song they sing?
Salo.
Not the one. Yeah, we've played them loads.
Yeah. if you want to have a good domestic cup run, I find you do need a favourable draw. And look, the season we win it, we get some great draws on the way to winning both cups. It being Arsenal, I mean, it adds some extra fight to it, adds some extra spice to it. I agree with Chris, that could be a little bit of a downer, depending on what's going on with our squad by that point, of course. But listen, the exact same goes for Arsenal as well. I think they've got a thinner squad than us, a less experienced squad than us. It's a boss game. And look, the Emirates, we're not too bad there. We've got a reasonable record there as well. At least it's an exciting fixture. And if you get past that one, I mean, look, ultimately, it's a bit obvious to say, but you've taken out one of the other favourites for the competition on the way as well.
Yeah, and potentially someone you might come across in the final. And then there's all the jeopardy of losing in a final, which is worse than losing it. You know, that's it. It's as bad as it gets. You've got to beat them all at some point. You've got to beat the good sides. You've got to beat the indifferent sides. You've got to beat the lower sides. You know, Huddersfield would have been a nice draw, but it hasn't happened. We'll raise our game for it. We have good battles with Arsenal. We have a favourable record against Arsenal. So why not go then and knock them out? I think that's the way you've got to look at it.
Yeah. Chloe?
Can't be asked.
Honestly, well, that's someone else goes to that one, eh?
Just so much footy. Could you not have gave me Preston North End, which is just down the corner? Couldn't you have, please? Midweek, Arsenal away. And it's just that everyone else has got easy draws, bar Everton, who've got Crystal Palace. Everyone else looks like they're having a great time and going through to the next round, and we've got Arsenal. And an Arsenal side that I think will go strong for that. And I don't know whether Liverpool will. I don't think Liverpool would go that strong. I think there'd be a lot of rotation where Arsenal, I don't think there'd be as much rotation because I don't think they have that much rotation.
I see it as a positive thing, if I'm being honest, because I think Liverpool will go strong. Because Klopp said himself, it's almost like you go as strong as you can in those situations. I think you're right, Chris. I think if we get past West Ham in the Carabao Cup, a two-legged semi-final in January is going to be a wrinkle that's hard to predict right at the moment. I mean, is Port Vale still in that competition? I mean, like, again, if you end up with someone winnable, you know, end up with a really winnable game in that, then you can get a bit harder. But I agree on that. I think Arteta will go full strength because I think ego-wise, and it's a home as well, he can't afford to take his eyes off that game. So I don't mind it, you know, because again, you can go full strength and Arsenal can beat you because they're a good football team. But I think they're beatable at full strength. And even if they were to beat us at full strength and go for it gung-ho, I'm actually not that asked for what that takes out of their legs moving forward as well. Go on. What do we reckon?
I think the advantage, if I'm trying to look for positives, of playing Arsenal at this stage is I think Liverpool are looking at this season, Jürgen's looking at this season and thinking we've got a really, really good chance of winning the Europa League here. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to put the Europa League above the FA Cup and the Carabao in terms of importance. Is this squad right now capable of winning the Premier League and the Europa League and the Carabao and the FA Cup? I think in your heart of hearts, probably not. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be pretty difficult. So if you do go out in the third round against Arsenal, you've got that whole like, yeah, okay, fine. Because if we win a cup double or a Europa League and we really do challenge for the Premier League, you might be looking at the FA Cup tour and going, thank God we didn't get through to the quarterfinal there.
I think that's a big difference. If there was other big matchups where, you know, Newcastle play Sunderland, but Newcastle should win that. But my problem is that we've got Arsenal whilst everyone else has easy sides. So when you say beat them and the draw items up, it doesn't, because Newcastle will still be there, City will still be there, United should still be in there. And yet you've taken out Arsenal, but there's still other massive teams who you do not want to face. Where if it was a little bit further down the line, everyone's got to face each other then. There's a pool of the big, big clubs. And like you mentioned, Port Vale, who've somehow managed to get through to the Carabao Cup, so fair play to them. And I'd absolutely love them if we could get past West Ham. But that, I think that's where I'm angry, is that like it's the first round and we've got a massive side. It was either them or City who I wouldn't want the most, because the ones who you're up in the league against, I'm hoping that they've got a hard January, because their December so far looks piss easy. So I'm hoping that their January at least counterbalances it, which might help us out. But yeah, the only thing that annoys me is the fact that even when you get past Arsenal and you feel like massive win that, every other team who you do not want to get will not be knocked out because they've all got easy fixtures.
It's just on Arsenal, I was interested to see what they did actually in all the other competitions last season. They got to the fourth round of the FA Cup, they knocked out, got knocked out in the third round of the EFL Cup, and then only got to the round of 16 of the Europa League. So this is a team that's not proven itself capable of actually playing on multiple fronts themselves.
And they got knocked out in the Carabao this season as well, didn't they?
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's fine. We've got a decent handle, I think, on Arsenal. And look, I think the league game before that is ultimately the most important of the two. I think whoever wins, that's probably going to be top of the league at Christmas. It's so close to Christmas, of course. means there's going to be a little bit of potential afters for it. You know, is that like the consolation prize for the team that's fucked in the league? You know, well, I guess
you quite often guess see that type of stuff happening though, don't
you? Yeah,
we?
Yeah, you really
didn't we do.
We
do it to Manchester City. We lost to them, and then in the like League Cup or something, whatever it was, we went and beat them, and then the league, the next game, we beat them as well. Either way, I'll be excited when it comes around, but right now, Arsenal away in the midst of trying to go for a league title, the Europa League, and it's the first round of the FA Cup for us. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, we play Newcastle on the first, and then we've got, and then the Arsenal game. Obviously, it's to be confirmed when Christ. That'll be picked. But that's, I mean, that could be like moved to a Sunday, which it, that's then just a normal week.
No, you know what I wouldn't mean? Mind.
Yeah, it could be worse. And weirdly, the Christmas stuff falls quite kindly for us this year. We haven't got any of those stupid like 46 hours between football games, which David Moyes loves the players in. So we haven't got that going on this year. But yeah, well, I feel okay. What? How do you feel at home about the Arsenal's a draw? It is, I think, on paper one. No, I can't sit here and dress it up as going, that's the best possible draw for us. It's just not. Just get crap teams in the first two or three rounds. If you can get a League One or League Two side up to Championship progressively as you go third round, fourth, fifth round, you are laughing for that competition. But yeah, I can't say that I don't fear Arsenal in the league and then say that I fear them in
the FA
Cup. They
don't want to play us either, though.
No, yeah, exactly. They'll be living with that. You know, you'll have to wheel out the Bluetooth speaker again in preparation for this one. Okay, Sheffield United midweek. The same argument for Fulham is it's all well and good getting the point at Man City, it's all well and good going second in the league with the late winner over Fulham. If you then go and cock it up at Bramall Lane, then you've laid yourself back. So I'm enjoying the weekend at the moment, but I'm going to be nervous once again coming back to midweek, because the only recent memory I have of that is a very, very scrappy late 1-0 win there when Dean Henderson basically threw one in. So, yeah. You know, if that's the benchmark, then strap ourselves in. It'd be nice if we could actually just beat them, because let's be honest, they're rubbish and everyone else has.
Yeah, but they're about to lose their manager, which will make the players all double down. It's not us, it wasn't us. We'll show you against Liverpool that actually we've got the dog in us, but there's people saying they've lost half a yard of pace, they don't make second challenges like they used to. It's all gone from them, and looking at them thinking they're dead set for the trapdoor and back into the Championship. Nothing like seeing your manager get sacked, and we've been on the end of this time and time again where teams double down and find Herculean efforts because they feel they've got something to prove, because it's that age-old conversation. Was it the manager or is it the players? For me, it's always the manager. The players do what the manager says, or don't, rather. I just think.
I mean, the players are crap as well.
Yeah, but that will be the game when they find a little bit extra, because the knives have been out this week for them. So we kind of always seem to fall foul of that. So the point before made about
they've not sacked him yet. So the likelihood is we might not get a new manager bounce. We'll get a caretaker manager bounce, which isn't quite as big a bounce, I don't think, as the new manager bounce.
But it's a better bounce than where they are right now,
it's
isn't
definitely
it?
Definitely a bigger bounce than the little bounces that they're.
Yeah, so for me, it becomes a potential banana skin, because wounded pride makes people try harder, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, let's have it right. They are currently on less points at this stage of the season than Derby County were. Record lowest point. Derby got 11 points in a season, and they are currently, Sheffield United are currently worse, trending worse than that. They've got 5 points so far.
So they need to get 6 points from what? How many?
Of the remaining 24 games of football. But to the point, yeah. I mean, they actually need more to break it. They need 7 points to be able to be better than Derby County, which is great. Well done. You got a point more than Derby County. I mean, what are we doing here? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this goes back to it. It's fucking stupid.
Did you know it's been 125 years since Sheffield United won the first top division in English football?
Well,
I think it's the second longest drought going. I think Preston North End's is the longest.
Really?
At like 130 something years.
And absolutely no sign of that ever changing anytime soon.
It can't be 130 years since Preston won the league.
Have a look. I think it is, you know. They were early doors winners, them boys, weren't they? I think it was Preston.
I mean, this just couldn't be any less interesting for this particular podcast, but let's win the league. All I've got in this is the fear. It's fear and anxiety of we should beat them because they're crap. It is one of those little atmospheric grounds, midweek, night game, under the lights, all that kind of stuff. This is where we could do with Liverpool learning some sort of lesson from the weekend of just book your ideas up and go a little bit harder and go and get the win. Let's not make this any more complicated than it needs to be, and we should have the firepower, because as much as a new manager bounce, I'm sorry, but who's this manager, and is he bringing a bunch of really good footballers with him? Because I don't care how high they get, is he a mega bouncy ball? Is that what it is? Because
Chris Wilder shaped bouncy ball.
They feel like a bag of wet sand to me, if I'm being perfectly honest. How are you feeling at home? Are you feeling the nerves and all the worries that kind of come with that? Do let us know. Right, Sam, we're going to wrap up there before we get the answer, because apparently 134 years. Well, according to the Blue, blimey. Preston just feel like one of those teams that like did stuff in the 60s or something, you know?
Yeah. No? How long ago did they stop saying it'll be our year this year?
They've got like Everton fans have got posters of Preston up on the wall to remind themselves.
Just makes them feel better. 1995, not on you.
Not on that, not on. I just want to end on a comment from Mike Messi, who says, "Leave Nunez's hair alone. Remember how shite Torres went when he went from long blonde to shaved head, the Samson effect." Can I just...
His hair wasn't as bad as what happened, you know.
Can I just make a point, though, that Torres was really good with his blonde hair?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we're talking about the reverse Samson effect that we might have here. The shaving his hair off might make him better. Just saying. What I'm saying, it's not going to get loads worse if he's got a skinhead than he's got his plait, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like one of the kids' rainbow high dolls at the moment.
It's how we do... my daughter's hair when she goes to gymnastics, and which is like, you know, look, honestly, it doesn't get in the way, it stays tight, so it's not coming loose and stuff, so there's a practicality to it. But honestly, he looks like a 13-year-old girl who's just been on a holiday to Ibiza.
Yes.
And he's only cornrows away from being the next stage of that as well, by the way.
Oh my god, braids,
yeah, full, like proper braids. Yeah. Done that,
but with like a pink one. Yeah. No, I've just seen it, and it's horrific.
I think that's the 17 go away for the first time without your parents here, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, cool. Thank you so much for joining us. If you wanted to see us or listen to us talk about Manchester City, maybe go on a touch Spursy, then come and join us on the Bias Football podcast over on redmenplus.com. Always promises to be a good show. We'll do that, and we'll have a good time, and hopefully you will too. Thank you so much to Chris, to Chloe, to Steve, and to you guys for watching and listening. You're the best. But especially thank you so much to Trent Alexander-Arnold. Ta-da. Thank you so very, very much for checking out the video. If you enjoyed it, drop a like. The season is now well underway. If you need extra Red Men content, be it podcasts, videos, documentaries, interviews, and general shows, fill your boots on redmenplus.com today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.